ช่วงนี้ก็เป็นช่วงรัตติกาลรัตติกาลก็มันมีส่วนของในการส่งเสริมให้เราได้เห็นประโยชน์ก็อาศัยการมีส่วนของการความสำคัญ
โอเคSo it's evening time, and in the evening it's getting darker, and we're entering the first part of the night, which is the 4 hours from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. and then we'll go into the middle part of the night from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. and then the last part of the night and from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. and it's a suitable time for our practice. But in order to do the practice, then we need the Noble Dhamma, and that's referring to the Dhamma of patient endurance. And then with patient endurance, we can focus on examining the area where we're located, but not the geographical area, but the area of our consciousness or of our lives, which is our body and mind. And so we survey that area in order to seek knowledge and seek clarity. We're like an astronomer looking at the stars, or a geologist looking at the rocks and the minerals, and we're looking for that for the Dhamma that leads to enlightenment. So this evening time is very supportive, and it's a supportive situation to bring our consciousness to a small area of focus and not a wide area of focus, so that we can bring our mind into the present moment. No need to worry about the past, and no need to worry about the future, because the past, it's gone away, and the future has not yet come. So the Pachupanna Dhamma is the time where all that we have to see is all right here. And it's our responsibility and our job to see and to look and understand the Nama Dhamma. Nama Dhamma, more and more. And so viveka, or seclusion, is one element that we have which is supportive to our practice. Our environment here is also supportive. So as the evening time is a suitable time for to apply ourselves to practice, then we take up that opportunity. But there are many aspects that we have to tolerate and endure in order to do that. And there are many distractions that we also tend to get lost in that we need to overcome. And so we adapt ourselves to doing this, living as one who's awake, living as one who's aware and one who knows. And in this way we continually re-establish our focus. Atta hi atta no natho. The self has to be the refuge for the self. And if the self can be a refuge for the self, then we'll be able to live without worries and concerns. But then the situation for our practice is supportive, but can never be perfect, and there'll always be obstacles. So we just take each of these obstacles as a lesson. And first of all, examine the body before examining the mind. The body is just a conglomeration of elements, which is called Mahabhuta Rupa. It's many smaller objects joined together to make a large object that we recognize as this body. It's also a sankhara, or a conditioned thing. It's what we call kaya sankhara. And this material Dhamma, Rupa Dhamma, is one aspect of natural phenomena. All of those material aspects do their duty according to the the tilakana. That's the three characteristics of impermanence and imperfection and not self. And those things which arise also decay. So we don't have the power to forbid or prevent or change this situation, because these are universal characteristics within nature. So we just observe and examine and learn and understand the body as just the body and see the way it's made of material elements. All of those elements, we could look at them in one aspect as scientific elements of iron, zinc, aluminium, potassium, various endless different elements. Or we can look in the traditional sense of earth, water, fire, wind, and also space and consciousness. And it's a process, an ever-changing process of material phenomena and immaterial phenomena, what we call the body and mind. But the task in analyzing that is to remove our assumption of a self. The Buddha is the one who did this provided an example for us. He renounced the world, renounced his throne and all of his comforts, and he gave up his attachments and gave up his identification with being a self, and then applied himself to examining the phenomenon of life and determined to find out what it was. And then when he saw it all as just as nature being the way it is, then that put him to ease. And he taught so that we can come to ease by undoing our delusion of identity and seeing things as us and seeing things as ours. So then that's according to the theoretical basis, then all of our mental experience is some of that experience is positive, some of it is negative, and some of it is neither positive nor negative. But then if we take the position that it is what it is and it's not us, it doesn't belong to us, then whether those experiences are positive or negative or neither, then we can always undo our attachment and let go. This means not to live as a worldly person, not to live as one who's obstructed by these things and attached to these things, but to live as one who is a refuge to oneself, and to practice as one who aims to depend on oneself and not on others, and to learn from one's own experience, to learn by focusing on knowing in order to overcome the hindrances so that we can see according to the truth. Because we're observing this process of nature which is always pulling us along, and we're focusing on that and examining it to see it is what it is. The Buddha said we should focus on knowing, focus on seeing the noble truths. He suggested that suffering is the thing upon which we should place our focus. And then we observe continually, following and observing our experience continually with mindfulness and with patience and restraint. We have the restraint of morality, and we have the restraint of supervising and watching over the senses. It's at those sense bases that we watch, and so it's those sense bases that we observe our experiences through each of those senses, and seeing the mental objects also as they arise. So with restraint and with focus, then we see that those sense bases are also the place where tanha or craving arises. And the place where craving arises is also the place where craving can cease. Ye chittang sanyame santi mokanti marabandana. The one who continually observes and examines one's own mind can escape from the bonds of Mara. When we watch our mind, we see its tendency to go to desire, to feel incomplete and to want something to fill it up. The Buddha taught that we should examine right there at the heart and watch out for the snare of Dhamma. And so then in that way we're taking up the same practice that the Buddha took up in overcoming the world and practicing differently to those children or worldly people, putujanas, always learning and examining, studying those aramana, all the mental objects arising in the mind. There are those favored mental objects and those unpleasant mental objects. And then we notice that the way that this works, that if we see there's something to gain, then we also have something to lose. But if we don't see there's anything worth wanting there, then we also have nothing to lose and nothing to fear. So then we can see that there's as much harm in liking as there is in disliking. And then gaining this kind of equanimity, we begin to gain power over the hindrances and reduce their power over us. This increases our own power and our own energy. But if we have no restraint, then we're weak. If we do have restraint, then we're quite secure and safe. So just as the Buddha achieved his own safety, he did that through not welcoming or dismissing his own experience. And so we heard in the suttas that before his enlightenment he sat down on 8 handfuls of kusa grass. And that's a simile where those 8 handfuls represent the 8 worldly dhammas. And the Buddha determined to overcome the worldly way or the useful way of children and to grow up and develop beyond that. He saw them as simply obstructions, not only that disappointment was a distraction, but also delight was also just an obstruction and a distraction. Even though it's instinctive to like and dislike, to laugh and to cry, by relying on restraint we can see clearly and overcome that kind of instinctive reaction and take away the danger of the worldly dhammas. If we have the dhamma of the noble ones, that's patience, then we can develop in the way of the noble ones and see things according to the truth. And so with that aim in mind, then we all train and practice because we all have the opportunity for practice. We rely on our faith and respect in the Triple Gem and see that it's the Triple Gem that makes this path available for us so that we can build the highest benefit. So having this opportunity, then we sit meditation. We have the tools that we need. All we need is our body and the suitable conditions so that we can practice to put down the mental burden and give up all the worries in the mind. Observation of breathing is kayagata sati. It's examining the body, observing the body, seeing the body just doing its job by itself, and knowing the in-breath and the out-breath. But with our unfamiliarity in this practice, then we face obstacles. And those obstacles we call the five hindrances, or niwaranas, with kamachanda being the first. That's sensual desire. Sensual desire can never be satisfied. There's no end to it. But with patient endurance, then we can watch it subside rather than following on after it. And we can just ignore it until the distraction goes away. We don't have to worry that we're going to miss out if we don't follow on after such desires. And then there are the distractions of ill will and drowsiness and also restlessness, which tests out our focus and our determination. If we have sufficient focus and determination, then we can get through both drowsiness and also restlessness. But this points to the fact that a practitioner must use effort if one is to overcome such difficulties. It's the word of the Buddha, viryena dukkhamacchedi. With effort one can overcome suffering. With continuous effort one can build familiarity and gain the understanding that one needs in order to surpass the obstacles. It's like sitting meditation out in the open, out in the sun. If we're afraid, we might feel weak. But if we're not afraid, we might see that it's much benefit from sitting in the sun, because the sun can make the vegetables and the grass grow. So we also can sit meditation outside. All meditating through all kinds of obstacles and difficult situations builds up our resistance. And it goes against the stream of following up after sensual comfort. It builds up our strength, not racing after kamachanda or sensual desires, because no matter how much one runs after these desires, one can never catch them, because they don't come to an end. So then the teaching is that we should focus on knowing and understanding suffering, seeing that when it arises, it must also pass away. And then seeing this, that helps us to give up our desire and then undo attachment to feelings and understand that in reality there's nothing arising and nothing passing away, but only illusion, nothing with substance. We focus on knowing by recognizing the breath, the in-breath and the out-breath. It's just part of the rupakhanda. It's a pointer to the rupakhanda. And then we see the internal aspects of the aramana, or various phenomena of the mind. Recognizing all of this as a natural process gives rise to dispassion and the reduction of desire, of viraga, undoing and reducing the desires that stay in the heart, and viveka, seclusion from all of the mental sankharas, because those mental sankharas will always observe that they are mixed up. They're a combination of kusala dhamma and akusala dhamma. And we'll see both of those kinds and all those combinations are simply illusion. In this way we can end our worries about such things. See, there's not much to it. It's just like a movie. Eta pasatimang lokang chittang raja Raja Ratupamang Yattapala Usidanti Nati Sangho Vijanatang. It's like the world, we should look at it and see that it's like a royal chariot in which fools become obsessed and enchanted, but the wise ones see that there's nothing of real value there. So it's just like a play or a movie. we don't need to look at the screen. We can look at our own heart and see the truth there. And that way we can undo all the desires that stain the heart. See the body as just the body. It's just the physical aspect. See the mind as just the mind. It's just that immaterial aspect. And in this way we can attain seclusion from both the body and the mind, not attaching to it, just knowing it, knowing the world as what it is. In this way we practice restraint, restraining ourselves from attaching and identifying, grasping onto things which aren't worthy of grasping. And we have that sense of restraining and reviewing, always watching over our own mind in all postures and in all activities. With mindfulness and restraint, we know the right amount, we know enough. We know that there's no need for more than what we have. With the continual practice of restraint, then we stop our grasping and attachment. We're training like this, both in the outside and the inside. And we always have the noble Dhamma of patience and determination to carry us through. We can see the mind clearly, we can see the world clearly. This is called vipassana. We know, we see clearly. We're developing right view. Natti panya sama abha. There's no light greater than wisdom. And then, if we, with that great light of wisdom, we see the truth of suffering arising, suffering disappearing, and coming to an end. And we can live like the Sugato, one who's well gone, gone right out of suffering. So these are the instructions, but it depends on our individual effort. We've got the situation to do it, and the body as our physical resource. We can practice in a group, and we can practice on our own. We're going in a different direction against the stream of the world. Both the practice and the result is right here where we are. We have the opportunity. It's very supportive. Kicho manusa patilapo. It's a great wealth and a great fortune to be born as a human being because of this opportunity to develop wisdom. And with effort, then we can make the most of our opportunity.
Annamayam avadagata satukaram tatamasare.